Shalom, everybody, and welcome to the Yishai Fleisher Show, broadcasting live from Jerusalem to the world, and you're a part of it wherever you are. It's really hard to describe to you right now where I am, and I'm not alone. I'm here with Rabbi Mike Foyer. Rabbi Mike, welcome to the show.
So glad to be here.
Right, so we're not at the Begin Center, and we're not at the old VOI studios, and we're not even in Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov. And we usually are for this segment of the show where we talk about spirituality. That's why the show is called Spiritual Cafe. But today it's not even Spiritual Cafe. Today it's Spiritual Bazaar. Spiritual Beer Bazaar. That may sound bizarre to you, what I'm talking about. But the fact is that our good friend, Chef Chaim Davids, asked us to join him at the place where he's a chef, which is the Beer Bazaar at the Shuk, the outdoor market, in beautiful Machane Yehuda, Jerusalem. And he asked us to come in and come to his place, which is owned by actually people I know, Avi and Helen Moskowitz. And this is the premier beer, Israeli boutique beer bazaar in the Shuk. Happens to be, I love beer. And we're sitting right now in the refrigerator overlooking the rest of the store and the beautiful bottles and the shuk, and people are shopping. It's Thursday. It's Jerusalem. There's ultra-Orthodox Jews outside. We're drinking beer inside the refrigerator, looking out at this world, and it is just an amazing pleasure. So first thing, we want to thank very much. Look, they're taking a picture of us. We want to thank very much the Beer Bazaar, and we're going to talk Torah here, and that's the beautiful thing. You may think that beer is, I don't know what, shtus, yeah, Narishkeit, silliness, and waste of time. No, we are drinking beer in Jerusalem and elevating it like the Hasidim in the 1800s, in the 17 and 1800s, and in Ukraine, on their ways, in the Kretschma. We are right now elevating, and I see you've already had your L'chaim, Rabbi Mike.
Well, that's true, because anything that can open the heart and bring a smile to the face has the potential to be holy.
Absolutely. So I want to say L'chaim here. L'chaim. This is what, Mike?
This is an India Pale Ale. It's the Fat Cat House Brew.
I feel like a fat cat. I feel like a Jewish, love of the land of Israel, fat cat, enjoying a beer in the land of Israel, in Yerushalayim. So l'chaim, everybody.
L'chaim.
Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech ha'olam, shehakol niyeh bedvaro.
Amen.
Oh, yeah. I love beer. Rabbi Mike, let's get down to brass tacks here. We're dealing with a Torah portion, which is not an easy one. It's conflict-ridden. Conflict-ridden. You got to love that Torah. At the end of the day, it's going to be all peace and goodness. In the meantime, the Torah is laying out lots of challenges to the Jewish people. And this one is the challenge of Joseph, who has gone down to Egypt at the sale of his brothers. They sold him to slavery. They sold him down the river. And now he's become the viceroy of Egypt. And now he's in a position of power. His brothers, who used to be in a position of power, role reversal, are now weakened. They are hungry. And he's been playing all these tricks on them. And now he threatens to arrest Binyamin. Binyamin, his younger brother, but nobody knows that yet. And there's going to be a face-off between him and Judah. And then finally, Joseph is going to reveal himself. And he's going to say, I am Joseph, who you sold down to Egypt. Is my father still alive? And I wanted to draw, as we start this discussion, I wanted to draw one dichotomy for you, or one interesting relationship. As he comes, as he reveals takes off his proverbial mask, mm-hmm, or reveals himself, the brothers come close to him. Similar wording is used when Moses comes down off the mountain, and his face is aglow. Mm-hmm. And instead of having a mask, he's having full revelation. And the people don't come close to him. It's too much.
Right.
And it's only when he kind of draws them in, and then finally, eventually, even has to cover himself, mask his own veil, his own awesome self, that people can really come close to him. So the revelation here is taking off a kind of a fake mask, but the brothers immediately do come close to Joseph. So I wanted to talk to you about this issue of masks and being able to, Joseph revealing himself, And the brother is kind of, yes, like immediately coming closer to them.
It's a beautiful parallel, because Joseph's revelation to them was kind of like the revelation of God in the world. What do I mean? What does he say to them? He says, you think you sold me into slavery, which, I mean, technically you did, but really this was God's plan. And in their seeing Joseph before them. Though the Torah never states it explicitly, you think they didn't remember the dreams? Right? The dreams when he had told them that, I see, you know, we were all gathering sheaves of wheat and your sheaves bowed to mine. Or I was there and the sun and the moon and the stars bowed to me. And that's why they beat him up and threw him in the pit and sold him.
Right.
Now, as they suddenly see him as someone they've already bowed to, there was a revelation of the fact that God can work through the most minute details of existence to reveal his will. And what could draw you closer than that? Whereas Moshe, you know, in that incident you're speaking about, he came down and his face was shining with the light of God, who was basically beyond the world. You know, there on top of Sinai, when God opened up the seven heavens and the seven depths and showed Moshe that there was nothing else but he. And the impression that made on Moshe's soul and body, that I think the people were unable to grasp that. And so he had to veil it in order that they could come close to him. And that's really a big difference between Yosef and Moshe, right? Yosef is the one who reveals God in the reality we know. And Moshe is the one that sort of brings the God from beyond and makes him accessible.
How ironic is it that one of the reasons that Moses is kind of chastised is that when he originally leaves his Egyptian world and comes to the well in Midian, then the women at the well refer to him as an Egyptian, as opposed to Joseph, who was referred to by Eshet Potiphar and by others as a Hebrew slave. And that's why they say sometimes that some of the commentators and the rabbis tell us that one of the reasons that Moses didn't go into the land of Israel was because he was an Egyptian, while Moses was always a Hebrew. And it's what I'm bringing out here, what we're discussing, is kind of the reverse, where Joseph puts on this mask of an Egyptian. And it's not a real mask, and when he reveals it, people can come close to him. Mm-hmm. But Moses, revealing the mask of the other world, you can't come close to that so easily.
I mean, that's Moshe's whole role. His whole role is to be able to bring redemption from outside. You know, the sages told us that, Ein ha'asir matir et atzmo.
Right.
Right? The prisoner can't free himself. And that in the end of the day, Yosef is able to reveal to the brothers that the divine will was really driving them when they took their actions. But they end up in Egypt. They're going into slavery, not coming out. And it's Moshe that shows them that actually the world is not at all what you thought. It's not even just that God is able to act through the minutia of life. It's actually God transcends the minutia of life. And Moshe, not only does he appear to be an Egyptian, but where does his name come from? You know, his whole story is nameless. Says that a nameless person from the tribe of Levi married a nameless woman from the tribe of Levi, and they had this son. He doesn't get a name until when?
Until he's drawn out of the water.
By whom?
By Bitya or Batya.
Batya, meaning he gets his name from the daughter of Paro.
Right.
He comes from the outside because that level of redemption is something which is beyond our grasp.
And he's going to be tasked with something very, in my mind, very unpleasant, very unsavory, and that is that he's going to be tasked with exiling the Jews. He's going to be tasked he's not going to send perpetual food to his father in the land of Israel and visit him as though he's retired in Florida. No.
You're speaking of Yosef now, not
right, Yosef. You know, back to our Torah portion, which is Vayigash, towards the very end of the book of Genesis, Bereshit, and he is going to reveal himself to his brothers, and he is going to demand or ask, but basically command that the whole family of Israel is going to be brought down to Egypt in order to yet again fulfill this grand vision of the Jewish people exiled and then later a glorious return. But he's going to be tasked with that, I would say, very unpleasant and unsavory task of bringing the Jews out of the land of Israel.
I mean, and into the depths of physicality. You know, I mean, this is Yosef's role in his real life, that he is the master buyer and seller. You ever wonder why? I mean, you said Yosef was the viceroy, right? So why is it, as the viceroy, that he even noticed his brothers? I mean, if you were the viceroy, would you be out on the selling floor weighing the grain out for every person that came from Canaan to buy it? Not at all. You'd be up in your plush office, you know, maybe checking the numbers every once in a while and eating lunch three times a day. But here he is. He's down there engaged in the details because he understands it's the very physicality of the world which offers the greatest opportunity for contact. That's what Yosef wants. He wants contact with God, contact with man. And that's how he's there ready for his brothers. And so his instrumentality is actually to bring the Jewish people deep into the physical in order that ultimately it can be redeemed.
As you were talking about this, we're sitting again in the kind of refrigerated section of the beer bazaar here in the Machane Yehuda outdoor market. This is actually the covered market on the corner of Jaffa. And as you were talking about this, you have to understand that we're surrounded right now with, what are these called?
Kegs of beer.
Kegs. Yeah, but these are like kegs.
They're
for
the brewing kegs.
Right, the brewing kegs. And these guys right here, there are hoses that actually send down to the tap. And as you were talking about the physicality of this world, the hoses moved a little bit because somebody, you know, pumped a little bit of beer into holy beer into a cup sitting at this beautiful bar. By the way, he's surrounded by religious people, lovers of Israel, Israelis, just a very beautiful sight. It's really an amazing sight. But just that idea of, the, as you said, depths of physicality, these tsinorot, these
pipelines.
Right? There's a famous phrase in the Psalms about the kind of pipes or channels between heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of connect the upper and the lower. So I guess probably the epicenter of that here is, in the world is the beer bazaar, and it leads right to the Temple Mount. So we talked about this task of bringing the Jews into physicality, into Egypt, really exiling the Jews. And we know that Jacob, Yaakov, has been in exile before. He spent 20 years in the house of Laban. His uncle, no, excuse me, his, yeah, his, yeah, his uncle. Uncle, his uncle, that's right. And that's where he's going to meet his wives and so on. But before he left to go to Haran, to where Turkey is today, more or less, he stops in Beit El and he gets a vision from God who says to him, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be with you and I'm going to call you back to the land of Israel. So don't worry, go on your way. This exile isn't forever for you. This is part of the plan. So too, in this week's Torah portion, as Joseph is sending these big carriages to bring the family of Israel down to Egypt, Jacob, you know, hears that his son Yosef is alive, his spirit is enlivened, and he gets into the carriages. But before he crosses that border, he makes a pit stop in Beersheba, and he says, God, I'm worried. It says that he offered up offerings, and God came to him. It doesn't say he's worried, but the subtext is that God says, it's okay. You're going down to Egypt. Joseph is going to cover your eyes, meaning to say, you pass away with your beloved son, and you will be buried in the right place, in the Marat HaMachpelah, which we'll learn about next week, which is, you know, all about being buried with your fathers. But this is part of the plan, Jacob. Don't stress it.
It's not just don't stress it. It's don't be afraid.
Right.
To me, this speaks so deeply because this is the first usage of a phrase which is going to echo down through the prophets and through our very day, because what God says to him, he says, Anochi el Elohe avicha, right? I am the God, right? The Lord of your fathers. Al tira merda mitzrayma, right? Don't be afraid to go down to Egypt. And this phrase, Al tira Yaakov, right? Don't be afraid, Yaakov, is going to appear again and again. And I think it speaks to a very important aspect of the struggle that we face as a people today. Is that, you know, Yaakov, as we've spoken about before, he's the everyman aspect, right? As opposed to Yisrael, Israel, who is this ideal that he's striving for.
I call him my Clark Kent and Superman.
Right. So he's the Clark Kent.
Right.
Right.
He's mild-mannered, but also even a little clumsy sometimes. He's Yaakov, you know?
Right? Yeah.
And the Jew in the exile.
But what prevents each of us from rising to our Israel, to rising to our ideal? It's nothing but fear.
Right.
Right. And I like when I walk through the streets today, our struggle is a struggle with fear, whether it's the struggle with the wave of terror that we're experiencing right now. And the fact that we're sitting here in the Shuk and it's full and people are living this normal life, which is a holy life.
Let me just add, it's a little bit more than normal. It is voluptuous. There is something about the life here, especially at the Shuk.
Yes.
That is exuberant. It is.
It's sensual.
Sensual. It's ripe. It's right. Very alive. It's very attractive. There's something. It brims over. It's just there's something about the life force here in Israel, which is magnetic, procreative, and I mean that in the beautiful sense of the term. It's just alive.
To me, what it is what we spoke about last week or 2 weeks ago is that we're living a dream of 2,000 years,
right?
And the prayers of the Jewish people, and not just their prayers, but their sweat and their tears and their blood are actually fueling our existence. I mean, I always find it astounding just the productivity of this land. And you know, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the sages said that there is no greater sign of redemption than when the hills of Israel bring forth their fruit in abundance. You know, and we export fruit to Europe all year round. I mean, a country which 100 years ago was a barren wasteland and people could barely, you know, make it grow enough to feed themselves. Now we export food all over the world. I mean, it's an astounding thing. And it is a sign of redemption because it means that all those prayers and tears and sweat are available to us in the form of life. But the key is, in order to live, to really live, you can't be afraid. You can't be afraid because, you know what, even if there are risks, even if terrible things might happen, right, you have to just live. You have to live with vision, with courage. And I think that that's what he stops to check in with God. And he says, like, I don't know where this is going to head. And God says, don't worry, I do. And yeah, I don't even have to tell you. I'll tell you, you'll be okay. And obviously, it's going to be a long time before, you know, he'll get buried in the cave of Machpelah, but his children will be slaves for hundreds of years. But in the end, that'll be okay too.
Sometimes when I talk to people, I ask them, well, you know, why... Well, I ask you, like, why do you and I merit to be here at the Beer Bazaar in Jerusalem, as opposed to the many righteous people who existed for the last 2,000 years? And for the sake of brevity, my answer is that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have no idea why Yishai Fleischer gets to do a show with Rabbi Mike here at Machane Yehuda Shuk and see this life force. I have no idea.
In a refrigerator.
Right. And the truth is that I very much doubt that I... you know, have some kind of merit, specific, you know. But what I can tell you is, now that I'm here, I'm going to try, and we're going to try, to live that dream of our forefathers of those 2,000 years. Meaning to say, make them, do it for them, live it fully, and be alive, pre-present in it fully.
And you hear how that's an erasure of the fear. The question, how do I merit, is a question of fear. It's the neuroses of like, oh, like, but how do I merit? Because maybe I don't deserve it, and that means it's going to disappear in an instant, and I have no agency.
Right?
Whereas what you just said is, well, I don't know how I got here, but I'll tell you what, I'm going to make the most of it.
Right.
I'm going to live. And That's the only justification for us being here, which is not just living for ourselves. It's bringing geula. It's bringing redemption.
And in a sense, redemption is a future term.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also saying, do it for the past.
Well, because we're redeeming the past bringing redemption.
Very good. Okay, so we're at the Beer Bazaar. This place is owned by Avi and Helen Moskowitz. The chef is a friend of yours and mine, a listener to the show. A shout out to Chaim Davids, who makes very special beer-related food here at the Shuk, at the Beer Bazaar. The reason I said at the Shuk is because the food here is specifically tailored to use products from the Shuk.
Mm.
And there's tastes of the Shuk in the food that Chaim prepares. By the way, there's also a Beer Bazaar in Tel Aviv as well. So you know, there's that. Oh, here we go. I love when segues just come. And maybe for when I say L'chaim, like this, L'chaim again.
L'chaim.
L'chaim, Rabbi Mike.
L'chaim.
We make good segues. And the segue is between the Beer Bazaar in Tel Aviv and the Beer Bazaar in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
It's the tension between Joseph and Judah. And here's the segues, right?
Here's the segues.
You have this, the rabbis painted as a kind of, no other term really fits it, but clash of titans.
Absolutely.
It's like, boom, boom. It's like these like two kings, two forces in the Jewish people. And we're going to see these forces reborn later with Saul and David, mm-hmm. Shaul and David. And they're kind of like at odds with one another. And Judah steps up, tags in, and he's like, I'm Goldberg. And he walks into the ring, right? And he's like, boom. He's like, you cannot have, I have to bring Benjamin back to my father, Jacob. And I will fight you, and I will do whatever is necessary, or I'll even be enslaved to you, but I can let you do this. And Joseph like breaks down, and it's like, and the rabbis see this as like two forces, two messianic forces. A Mashiach ben David, a Mashiach ben Yosef. This is from the Judean line, is David, and the Joseph line. Two energy forces that not always do they work together. Sometimes they're in conflict. But let me add that when they do work together, there's nothing that can stop that energy.
Well, because it's the true messianic vision,
right,
that integration.
Right.
Because in many ways, the model of leadership of Joseph is that model of what is it to be a leader in exile? You know, to me, it always brings to mind that phrase, the Jews are just like everybody else, only more so.
Right?
Meaning Yosef out-Egyptians the Egyptians. Right? He is going to show them how it ought to really be done in Egypt. Whereas Judah represents that sense that, no, we're the Jews and we're nothing else. That's absolutely what we are. And so, therefore, he brings forth that fiery passion of total commitment to God and total commitment to peoplehood and differentiation. And the sages also say that Yosef is the power of sanctifying the material, whereas Yehuda is the power of infusing it with the spiritual.
Right. Another way of understanding that is that Joseph represents a pure righteous, meaning to say righteous from birth, a kind of perfection of being from the get-go, while Judah represents teshuvah, mm-hmm. Being able to overcome challenges and falls and get back up and get to righteousness. And they both have their values. There's nothing like a pure, from birth, people that are just these beacons of light. But there's nothing like being able to overcome and get back up again and really come from a dark place and choose God.
And this is why Joseph is the one to sanctify the physical, because it doesn't hold I don't want to say it doesn't hold attraction for him. It doesn't draw him astray. He's able to relate to the physical as a creation of God, which is here to serve him. Here's this beer. This beer can be a wonderful celebration of life, an opportunity to say a blessing, to bring people together, or it can be plenty of things that don't even bear mention.
Right.
Right? And the aspect of Yosef, which is within us, says, we're not going to ignore this creation of God. We're going to sanctify it and elevate it to him. And the aspect of Yehuda says, listen, I need to be separate from that, because in both my brokenness and my experience, but also in my sort of fiery, passionate purity of commitment, there's no place for that. And that's why the messianic vision, as it's laid out in Ezekiel, right, is that the bringing of Yosef and Yehuda back together and their fusion is a world in which we can live where the spiritual and the physical, it's not one infused in the other or one is the vessel for the other. It's just one life.
And you're talking, of course, about the Haftarah, the added reading that we read from the prophets in this week's Torah portion on Shabbat. And it's about this bringing together of the two branches, the branch of Joseph, the branch of Judah. They come together. I want you to know that this had a tremendous impact on me in my life, this Haftarah, because I understood it as a younger man in college as really relating to American Jewry and Israeli Jewry and how we've split apart and we need to come back together and we need to kind of be bound together, not allow each other to kind of spread apart and be two nations as though there's the tribes of Israel who are like exiled and the tribes of Judah. No, we have to hold on together. And this show, in part, is an effort to hold across the Atlantic our arms interlinked and all the tribes, not to let any of their tribes get lost.
No, because the one thing that unites both Yosef and Yehuda, although they don't realize it in the moment where they're struggling over Benjamin in our portion, the thing that unites them is a love of their brothers. And that's the beautiful sort of dramatic irony of this moment when Yehuda steps up and says, no way, you can't do this. I won't let you take my brother. I'll sacrifice myself. It's in many ways, it is a fixing of that horrible act of selling Joseph into slavery. And what only Yosef realizes is that through provoking this crisis, he has forced the brothers to realize that the thing which unites them is their love of each other.
And I just want to point out that there are biblical examples of the Joseph energy and the Judah energy working together. And I'll just give one or two examples. Mm-hmm. The most famous one, I don't know if it's famous, but we all know it, but we don't think of it in these terms, is really the two spies against the 10 spies, the Kalev ben Yefuneh and Yeshua ben Nun. One is one of the princes of Judah, and the other one is the prince of Ephraim, the son of Joseph. When they're together, they could overcome Jews that are wayward. They could overcome 40 years in the desert. They can overcome three giants. They can overcome all kinds of things. Come into the land of Israel after 45 years from the day that they walked in the land of Israel together. Come in and be the generals and the rabbis for the next generation. How do they have such a power? Only because the energy of Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David are united. There's other examples of that. I'll just give maybe one more. The real famous example is the love of King David to Jonathan, the son of Saul. And another example, not as well known, is really who split the Red Sea. We're used to thinking that the person who split the Red Sea is Nachshon ben Aminadav, the prince of Judah. But there are other midrashim that say that it was the casket of Joseph that actually, when it was brought to the sea said, I will retreat from he who retreated. He who retreated from worldliness, from Eshet Potiphar, I will retreat and be. As he overcame nature and passion, I shall overcome my nature, says the sea. Well, which one is it? Who really split the sea? I'd like to say together, the energy of Joseph and Judah, when they're united, the sea splits. You could do anything.
Absolutely. So, I mean, in particular, you can do anything with the physical world. I think it's a great mistake of religion. And it's a great mistake of our existence in exile when we became Jews and we lost track a little bit of what it is to be Israel, is to think that our realm is an abstract one of thought and spirituality and that all the world offers is temptation. Whereas, you know, what the world offers is a medium for growth, right? The great energy which creation provides is there. And without Yosef, without that ability to engage in purity with the deep physicality of the world, then Yehuda can never really bear fruit.
Rabbi Mike, I want to thank you so much for the show today. It's fantastic sitting in a fridge with you and being surrounded by hoses, but with a big window onto the market of Ben Yehuda. Good news and bad news. The good news is that I'm going to go out next week to try to connect with Jews in the diaspora in America and connect them certainly to the story of our forefathers and mothers buried in the great city of Hebron. I'm going to be seeing
success in that.
Thank you so much, sir. I do need your brachot. I will be seeing our good friends Jack and Sarah and the show. Is dedicated to Jack's wife Lillian and Sarah, who he blesses, and Sarah's also she helps our show very much. And I'm going to be seeing them in beautiful Brooklyn, New York, trying to bring the spirit of the land of Israel. So we may not have a show next week, but I hope that you'll be with there with me. I'm gonna drag you with me spiritually there.
The Torah goes on.
That's right. The Torah goes on, and wherever I walk, wherever we walk, all of us should be in the land of Israel. So from beautiful beautiful Beer Bazaar here on at Machane Yehuda, I can't tell you the incredible energy. People are looking at us doing drinking our beers and doing our show from the refrigerator here. There's nothing more to say than this is the rebirth of the Jewish people in this land, and you could feel it, and we're allowed to be joyous. We should be joyous. We should be joyous for those 2,000 last years of diaspora. At the same time, I have to add a little bit of lemon juice into our beer here, and that is people are still hurt. People are still injured. We're still under regular attack, and my good friend Gennady is still in intensive care, really still fighting for his life very seriously.
Well.
And he was stabbed while beautifying Marat HaMachpelah area. That's where he was stabbed by a jihadist terrorist. So we should all pray for him as well. Rabbi Mike Foyer, I want to thank you again for such an awesome and incredible show. And let's finish up with a real L'chaim. Why don't you give us a L'chaim?
We should really merit that the physical parts of the world show us the beauty of the intimacy which is available in creation with God.
Amen. And may you all out there, wherever you are, be zoche to see revelation through being able to drink a beer from the land of Israel, a beer of the water of the land of Israel, the same waters that Abraham drank, and that Eliyahu drank, and that we're drinking right now. Rabbi Mike Foyer, L'chaim.
L'chaim.
Sorrow.